Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Marriage Fitness with Mort Fertel. This is Mort Fertel, and this is your Q&A teleconference. Let's begin by explaining what a Q&A teleconference is. So all the other teleconferences in your program are what I call teleseminars, and on the evening of those teleseminars, I come with a very specific agenda. Certain principles and practices that I feel are crucial for every marital situation. And I take the entire time of those teleconferences to develop those ideas with you. Admittedly, there's no opportunity for you to ask me questions about what I'm presenting or to ask me questions about what I'm not presenting. Those teleconferences are a monologue. Tonight is the exact opposite. It's not a monologue, it is a dialogue. I have no idea what we're going to discuss tonight. I have no agenda whatsoever because it's up to you. It's going to be based on your questions and based on how you explain your circumstances. So if at any point during the teleconference you have a question, just press star 6. That will cue you up for a question. If I click on you to ask your question, there is one rule that I ask you to abide by on this teleconference, and that is please start with your question. Again, if you're called on to ask a question, you must start with your question. I know from experience that people's tendency is to start by giving me all sorts of background information about your spouse, the marriage, the other man, the other woman, whatever the case may be. Sometimes it seems as though people could go on forever and ever, and I wonder if there's a question in sight. Try to keep in mind this is not a private session. It's a Q&A teleconference. So you provide the Q, and I provide the A. That doesn't mean we won't have a chance to talk. We will. But start with your question, then allow me to probe you for the background information that I need in order to answer your question. You'd be amazed at the information that I don't need, which you might otherwise take our time to provide. You'd also be amazed at the information that I do need, which you might not think to offer. So I hope at this point in the program you trust me, you realize whatever you're going to ask me, chances are good I've answered the question a few thousand times. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not on my toes, and doesn't mean I don't feel your pain. But I just have a big responsibility to many, many people on the line, and I simply cannot allow any one person to monopolize our time. So again, if you come on the line to ask me a question, please start with your question. You can also start, by the way, by just giving me your first name so that I can address you. And if for whatever reason you have a unique first name and you think it might compromise your identity, you can just make one up so at least I can address you by some name. Okay. Let me just make another announcement before we begin. We're getting lots of questions in the office about Mimi Daniel, Elise Hurtado, and David Rispoli. Those are the three other professionals that are available to you that work for me. They're available to you for extra private one-on-one sessions. And the questions are like, who are these people? What's my relationship to them? Are they familiar with the Marriage Fitness program? So let me just explain to you what's going on here so you all understand. Many of you have scheduled private sessions, whether it's phone calls or full-day intensives with me, but a lot of you want extra one-on-one help and either can't afford my fees or don't want for some reason to use me, and so that's the purpose of having David, Mimi, and Elise available to you. Their fees are dramatically less than mine. They're more easily accessible, more easily available. It's easier to schedule appointments with them. You should know that I chose them out of over 100 people that applied for the positions because they share my values. So if you feel a certain set of values coming across the plate to you here and you resonate with them and you want to speak to somebody that you know is pro-marriage and shares these values, you can count on David, Elise, and Mimi for that. I also pick them because they have a tremendous amount of experience dealing with marital crisis situations, not just marital situations, which is typical for a therapist or a counselor, but marital crisis situations, which is what most of you are dealing with. I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say that between the three of them, there's probably 40 years of professional experience dealing with marital crisis situations. So whatever you're dealing with, the chances are good that David, Elise, and Mimi have dealt with it and have been helpful in situations like yours many, many, many times. It would be an understatement to say that they are familiar with the Marriage Fitness program. They, all three of them, are certified marriage fitness professionals. I trained and certified each one of them myself personally before they took their first session. And in addition to the initial training they got before I hired them, we conduct ongoing training sessions on a monthly basis where we jump on a teleconference and sharpen our skills. So the bottom line is, if you want extra private one-on-one help, whether it's phone sessions or full-day intensives, and for whatever reason you don't want to use me, that's fine. You can use David, Elise, and Mimi. They have my full endorsement recommendation. You would get comparable advice from them that you would from me, and you can be in touch with my office here. We keep their calendars and schedule appointments for them. Okay, if you have any other questions about David, Elise, and Mimi, feel free to be in touch with my office, and we'll be sure to get you answers to those questions. Okay, let's begin. Anybody there?
Yes, my name is Casey.
Okay, Casey, how are you tonight?
Doing all right. My question is, how do I get my wife to get rid of her new friend, in quotes, and actually want to come back to the marriage if she's saying she's happier without it?
Are you new to the program, Casey?
Yes.
I can tell. I can tell. That's okay. There's no sin in being new. But your question is, I don't know if it's really a question. I mean, basically what you're saying is, I'm in the Lone Ranger track. I'm dealing with a difficult, obstinate spouse who's having an affair or has a new friend. You know, what do I do? My response to your question, Casey, is that the whole program is an answer to your question. I mean, there is no one short, simple answer to that question that is going to satisfy you, that's going to get you what you want. You've got to slow down. And don't look for this to be all resolved in one fell swoop, in one interaction, in one night, in one day, or even in one week. It took you years to get into this mess. It's going to take you a little while to get out of it. So relax. Slow down. Don't try to fix it all at once. And again, the whole program is an answer to your question. Your wife will drop her, quote, friendship with this man and come back to you when she feels connected to you, when she values you. And how can she feel connected to you and value you? Again, it's everything I'm teaching in the program. There's not any one thing I'm teaching that is the solution or answer to your problems, and yet everything I'm teaching in the program is a partial answer and solution to your problem. In other words, it all will help you move the needle. And that's the only way to resolve these situations. You know how to jump 10 feet high, Casey? You can do it. And so can everybody else on the line. You can jump 10 feet high. It's very simple. 1 inch at a time. And I know when you're frustrated and when you're desperate and when you're disappointed and betrayed and you know, you just want it all to go away. But if you look to try to make it all go away today, you'll never get anywhere. There is just no way to microwave this. Slow down. Take one step at a time. Your wife will let go of this friendship and stop risking her relationship with you when she values her relationship with you. She'll only value it if there's a sense of connection. And if you build up goodwill, it's like, let's say I go to Marshall's and I buy a vase for $5. I might bring it home, throw it on the couch, give it to my 9-year-old. When I get around to it, I'll put it on the mantle. Let's say I go to Sotheby's and I buy a vase for $1 million. I bring it home. You can bet I am not going to throw it on the couch. You can bet I'm not going to give it to my 9-year-old. And you can bet that I'm going to hire a professional to secure it to the mantle ASAP. Why? Why do I treat those two vases so differently? It's because I value them differently. You see, your wife, Casey, is treating you this way. is involved with another man and risking her relationship with you because she doesn't value you. She doesn't value the relationship, and therefore she's not scared to put it at risk. She's not scared to throw it on the couch. She's not scared to treat it casually. You've got to become the kind of husband and start to treat her in the way that she will value you in the relationship, and then she will stop putting it at risk. And that means letting go of that friendship and coming home to you.
My name's Amanda.
Good evening, Amanda.
Hello. My question is, what advice would you give to handle a spouse that's emotionally abusive and trying to save your marriage from somebody?
I'm not so fond of that term, but rather than getting into the semantics of why I'm not fond of it, I'd like you to describe the behavior that you're referring to without using that term so that I know what you're talking about. Because I don't know what that means, emotionally abusive.
Well, like putting me down, and when I'm going through the steps of your process here, I'm doing nice things and touch charges and talk charges and trying to show him things, but it continues to be putting me down and pulling out the negative things that he sees and things like that, and I'm trying to figure out how to help him get past that or see past that.
Mm-hmm. And so he's, when you say putting you down, he's critical?
Critical, very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Just for everybody else listening as well, I find that much more descriptive and much more helpful. I get what someone's doing when they're putting you down and when they're being critical. I don't understand what somebody is doing when we use the term emotionally abusive. So it's important to be specific with your, even when you're thinking about how your spouse is treating you. Anyway, Amanda's question is, what should she do when her husband is putting her down and being critical? First, let me start with what you don't do. The three C's you don't do. What are the three C's? Three C's are to criticize, condemn, and complain. More often than not, we treat people the way they treat us. So if your husband was criticizing you, it would be typical, it would be common, it would be understandable for you to want to criticize, condemn, or complain. In other words, to return the favor in kind. The three C's, criticize, condemn, and complain, my advice about them is very simple. Never, ever, ever do it. When you do, you mean well. You want it to be productive. You somehow have convinced yourself that this behavior is going to be productive, but it never is, right? I mean, look back at the history of your relationship. Anytime you've ever been critical, condemned, or complained, it's never worked. Those three C's lead to a fourth C, which is called cancer, cancer of the marriage. It's incredibly destructive. Three C's, criticize, condemn, and complain. Don't do it. Your husband's doing it to you. Don't do it in return. We should never treat people the way they treat us. We should treat people the way we want them to treat us. And that's a continuation of the answer to your question. I've described to you what not to do, that is, return the favor, criticize, condemn, and complain. And what should you do? Treat him the way you want him to treat you. Be a light, not a judge. Be an example. You see, your husband feels comfortable criticizing you and putting you down because from his perspective, you deserve it. I say from his perspective. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying you deserve it. You don't. Nobody deserves that. But it is from his perspective you deserve it. He's got a story he's telling himself in his mind that justifies him being critical of you and putting you down. Well, change that story, Amanda. And how do you change that story? You don't criticize, condemn, and complain. You kill him with kindness. You respond to his criticism with gratitude. Not gratitude, not that you're grateful that he's criticizing you. Of course, that would be disingenuous. But find something that he's doing right. Doesn't have to be in that moment. But find something that he's doing right. It doesn't erase or diminish the things that he's doing bad. They're still there. But find something he's doing right. Let him know that you noticed it and make a big deal out of it. How long do you think your husband would be able to be critical of you while you're consistently catching him doing things right, expressing gratitude and appreciation for it? He won't feel justified anymore. And it'll start to bother him, his negativity in contrast to your positive energy. It will start to bother him. You know when people don't feel bad about being negative? You know when people don't feel bad about ignoring you? You know when people don't feel bad about betraying you and criticizing you? They don't feel bad when they think you're doing all of the same. When they have a story that they tell themselves that clears their conscience and allows them to say in their head, she deserves it. Now, it doesn't mean that as soon as you change and start to be healthy and positive and functional, it doesn't mean that on that day he's going to feel a tug in his conscience and start to change his behavior. Because remember, his story is built on years of marital history. And you're just starting to build a new marital history. It's going to take a little while for that new marital history to trump the old marital history and for him to feel like he's basing his story on something that just isn't true anymore. But eventually, if you refrain from criticizing, condemning, and complaining, and you initiate the opposite, that is gratitude, eventually you'll be able to shift what's normal and what he feels comfortable with in the marriage. Let me take the opportunity to make a related point. This is very important for all of you on the Lone Ranger track. Every marriage has two leaders, the husband and the wife. And you each have the ability to lead. And no one's ability is any more or less important or powerful than the other. All too often, the one in the program allows their obstinate spouse to lead. And they're foolish enough to follow. My husband says, or my wife says, they don't love me anymore, and they want out. That's leadership. Are you going to follow? If you retreat from the relationship, if you cooperate with the divorce process, if you, you know, fold up and give up, so then you have followed your spouse who provided this negative leadership. But why did their leadership win? Why can't you provide just as strong leadership? Why can't you provide an alternative leadership? Why can't you step up and have a vision for how things could be different? And with just the same conviction, your spouse is being negative, you could be positive. And why can't that be just as infectious? The answer, of course, is that it can. But you have to be willing to do it. You can't follow them. I love it when I'm on these sessions and someone tells me, my wife wants me to do this, my husband wants me to do that, and they give me this whole list of, you know, wishes and react. And I'll just interrupt and say, well, why are we talking about what your wife wants? Why are we talking about what your husband wants? Who cares what they want? They're the obstinate spouse that's having an affair, that's filed for divorce, that wants a separation. Why are we talking about what they want? Why do you care? I don't care. Why are we following them? Why are we taking our cue from them? They're lost. They're off rails. They're behaving with no moral compass. What they need is leadership. Stop listening to them and provide leadership that they might begin to listen to you. You know, 100 years ago, if you stepped outside in shorts, people would look at you like you were weird. Nobody wore shorts. Today, you walk outside in shorts, and if it's nice out, nobody would notice. Why? Because it's normal. Because that's the culture that we live in. Now, what's the culture in your home? The culture outside, in terms of what people wear, the norms and mores, is very difficult to change because we're just one person. And what we do is not affect the culture at large, but every home has a culture. There's not 7 billion people in your home. There's only 2. There might be kids, but there's only 2 adults. The matriarch and the patriarch. And each of you have a tremendous opportunity to contribute to that culture. So, Amanda, what I'm saying is, behave in a way such that the culture in your home is that we don't criticize, condemn, or complain. And the more you influence culture in that direction, just like 100 years ago, we would have been uncomfortable walking outside in shorts. More and more, your husband will feel uncomfortable criticizing you in a place where you just don't do that.
Hi, Mort. This is Margaret.
Margaret, good evening.
I was wondering, I'm in the single track, and I'm new at this, and I'm struggling a bit. How does a husband that supposedly lost connection living with another woman that is total opposite of what I am?
Well, I'm sorry, Margaret. What was the question? How does a husband, and I don't think you finished the sentence.
Well, we're separated, and
I understand. You're separated. Your husband's living with his mistress. And what's your question?
Why do they go and find someone that is total opposite of what I am?
Well, why do they find someone who's opposite of you? First of all, I don't know that we care. I don't know that we care whether the mistress is similar to you, opposite of you. I mean, one thing we do know about the mistress that I hope is different than you is that she's willing to have a relationship with a married man. So I hope she's opposite of you. I mean, I don't know anything about these mistresses and misters, but that is one thing I know, which tells me pretty much everything I need to know about them in terms of the potential of the affair. This is one of the reasons why affairs never last, because the relationships that are, you know, in relationships between deeply flawed people. But I don't think you should concern, if you don't mind me saying, I think your question is flawed, because why do we care whether or not she's the same as you, whether or not she's opposite of you? I don't see how that can help you. In fact, it gives me the opportunity to teach you and everybody else that's listening that, you know, you're going to have lots of questions about what's going on in your life right now. It's important to decide which of two categories those questions fall into. One category are questions that if you had the answer to them, it would satisfy some curiosity you have, but practically speaking wouldn't really be useful to you. Nothing you could do with it. It's not going to help you get from A to B. That's the category that I would put this question into. Second category of question is a question that you're not only curious, but practically speaking, if you had the answer, it could help you. It could help you move forward. It could help you move the needle on the healing and the reconciliation. You only have so much time and energy. And as you already know so well, I don't have to tell you, these situations are exhausting. They take a tremendous amount of time and energy. And you simply cannot afford to pursue, both in your mind and with me or any other profession you might be working with, questions that, you know, you're curious about, which don't really have any value other than satisfying your curiosity. So let them go. Take a moment to think about what category questions go in and focus your time and energy on the things that you can actually do something about. I can tell you one thing, though, Margaret, about why your husband is with this woman, whether she's opposite or not, and why he's not with you. And this will help all of you dealing with infidelity, which unfortunately is many of you. Your husband's with her because he's seeking something in his relationship with her that he's not getting inside the marriage. Affairs don't lead to broken marriages. Broken marriages lead to affairs. In other words, affairs don't happen in a vacuum. They happen in the context of a failed marriage. And this is a bitter pill to swallow. Because, of course, when someone's having an affair, it's the easiest thing in the world to blame them and to confess their sin. And, of course, the blame is deserved, and it is a terrible sin. There's no question about it. But that's a short conversation, because there is no question about it. What's to talk about? Everybody agrees. Even your husband would probably agree. Deep down, they know what they're doing is wrong. So that's the short conversation. Now that we're done with that and we all agree with that, let's move on to something more compelling, more helpful, and more difficult to accept. And that is that if affairs don't lead to broken marriages, but broken marriages lead to affairs, then both people hold some responsibility for the affair. No, you didn't make this decision. And no, I'm not absolving your husband of responsibility of the decision. But the decision to have an affair happened in the context of a relationship which you helped create. And you contributed to there being significant gaps in the relationship that result in your husband making a very bad choice. So it's important to really take an honest look at what was missing in your marriage, how that relates to what he's getting in this other relationship, and then you know what gaps to fill. Then you know what some of the things are that you have to work on. This is important, by the way, not only in getting your husband to end the affair and to come back, because when he realizes that he can get in the marriage what he's, you know, trying to get outside of it, it puts a whole different spin from his perspective on the affair and on the possibility of the marriage. Not only will it result in him ending the affair and coming home, but it will also help significantly in rebuilding the trust. Why? Because it's very hard for there to be trust in the future unless the two of you have an answer to this question. This question meaning, what was missing in the marriage that left your husband vulnerable to reaching outside marriage? Because if you aren't clear on the answer to that question, and if you don't fill that gap in the context of the marriage, then how will either of you ever feel safe that this won't happen again? Let me put it another way. One of the reasons why people can successfully recover from infidelity, reconnect, and rebuild the trust. I mean, really, think about it. How is it possible that people can learn, How is it possible that people can trust their spouse again after such a terrible betrayal? It's possible because if you understand the context of the betrayal and you can navigate the marriage to a point where it's a whole different context, then the betrayed begins to feel that this could never happen again because the circumstances in which it happened don't exist anymore. And I hope you can see, in addition to the three pillars of trust, which I describe in the program, in addition to that, this is another piece of that rebuilding trust process. Okay, let's go on.
I cheated on my girlfriend, and
I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
It's a little better. What's your first name?
Chris.
Okay, Chris, how can I help?
Yeah, I cheated on my girlfriend and for a year, and I did it once time before, and now I'm in the same predicament. I cheated because, you know, I wasn't giving what I needed at home, and I fell in love with this other girl, and now, you know, my girlfriend wants me to turn off the love for her, but it's hard to do, and I try to tell her I just can't turn off love overnight, you know, and how do I get out of this situation, because I'm stuck.
Which situation do you want to get out of?
I love them both, but I've been involved with the other girl for 8 years now, you know, in a relationship, and this one, the one I cheated on with her for a year now, you know, I'm kind of stuck here because I'm stuck. I wanted to go back to the girlfriend for 8 years now, and, you know, I don't know what to do here because it's a toss-up, you know what I mean? Because, you know, we keep saying, oh...
Are you and your girlfriend in the program together?
Yes, she's on here, too.
And how long have you been in the program?
We just started yesterday.
Oh, wow. So you're very new. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask you another question. What was it? I lost my train of thought. 1 second. Oh, how long have you been together?
Who? The girlfriend?
Yes.
We've been together for 8 years now.
Why are you not married?
Because I don't know exactly why, because I just can't. I keep asking her to change a little bit, and she doesn't change, and it just seems like she don't want to change or anything like that. And
okay, so we just have a couple of minutes here, Chris. I totally understand the situation you're in. Do me a favor. Ask me a specific question that you think I can handle in a few minutes.
So how do I shut off love overnight? You know,
okay. Yep, I get it. I get it, and I can answer that question. The love that you're talking about, I just clicked on somebody else. I'm sorry.
Hi,
so don't,
it was me.
Yeah, don't ask your question yet. I'm sorry, I clicked on the wrong thing. Just hold on there for one moment while I answer Chris's question, and then you can go. So, Chris, the love that you're referring to, when you say, how do I turn off love, what you mean by that is, how do you turn off the feelings? Now, I know you're new to the program. Why would I start? Why would I introduce my answer in that way? Why would I define love in that way? Because you're new to the program, but as you get deeper into it, you'll see that that's not love in my book. That's not my definition of love. You'll get to my definition of love later. I'm willing, for the purposes of this teleconference, to entertain your definition of love. When you say, how do I turn it off, you're referring to the feelings. And the answer to your question is very simple. You, quote, turn it off by severing contact with, let's call her the mistress, even though you're not married, you're still betraying the woman that you are living with. I assume your girlfriend feels that's a betrayal, so let's call it that. So you're betraying her, and the way to, quote, turn off the love or the feelings for the woman is to sever your relationship with her. Have zero contact with her. No text, no email, no visits, no nothing. That will be difficult. It's a little bit like, I don't know if you're a smoker or if you've ever done drugs or if you've ever been, you know, had a drinking problem. I mean, you know, it's a little bit like kicking a bad habit. It's hard. You're going to feel pulled back to that relationship at times. You're going to have to exercise discipline to maintain your distance from that other woman. And in time, your distance from her will result in your feelings fading for her. Because where are those feelings coming from? What you're describing as love. It's not love, but you're describing it as love. It's okay, we can play with your definition. Where are they coming from? They're coming from your interactions with that woman. Think about it. You meet up with her. You have dinner with her. You have sex with her. You have fun with her. You laugh with her. Whatever you're doing with her, you're having positive encounters, and those interactions, those encounters, are giving birth to what you're calling love. They're giving birth to what I prefer to call feelings. The feelings don't come first. The actions come first. If you smother the actions, you will smother the feelings. And so that's part of what you have to do. Then the second step is you have to direct that energy and time that you have now freed up, not only energy and time, but now you're not connected to this other woman. Well, you're going to feel a desire to be connected. That's human nature. We all want to feel close. Now, you don't feel close to this other woman. You don't have anything to do with her. So you've got time, you've got energy, and you're now emotionally available, if I could use that term. And you can channel all of that to your wife or to your girlfriend, whatever, however you describe the relationship. And doing that, if you would laugh with her, spend time with her, have dinner with her, make love with her, have fun with her, all of those interactions, all of those encounters, once again, will give birth to what you're calling love, feelings, positive feelings. Now let's put the combination of those two together, because you realize that if you do both of them, it'll become easy for you to have nothing to do with this other woman, because you won't need her. You'll feel close, and you'll feel connected, and you'll feel fulfilled in your relationship with your girlfriend. Okay, so I already have somebody on the line, so go ahead, I'm ready for the next question.
All right, hi, I'm Joe.
Joe, did you say?
Joe, J-O.
Joe, okay, Joe.
Yeah, it's short for Jolene. Anyway, my question is, I'm on the Lone Ranger track. How do I get over the fear of my husband? He's not abusive or anything like that, but even just leaving the talk charge messages, I actually find myself hoping he doesn't answer because I'm kind of afraid of him.
Can you describe that feel a little bit more? I mean, like, let's say he did answer. What are you actually scared of? What happened?
I'm afraid of his reaction. I'm afraid I won't be able to remember what I was going to say. I started this. He's refused to have any contact with me outside of logistical, and that's only by text or email. And so I leave messages on his voicemail, and he did say something that made me really sad about a week ago, and so I did the apology letter, and you said not to just send him the letter, so I went to where he's staying, and he started yelling at me and telling me he's going to call the police, and I asked him calmly for just a few minutes, and I mostly just read the letter to him because I couldn't I was scared. He basically threatened to call the police and put a restraining order against me if I ever showed up again. So it's kind of hard because I don't know how to do the, continue to pursue with talk charges and kindness.
Right. Okay. So let me answer your question. I want to not only answer your question, but you brought something up that you didn't ask about, but I feel a responsibility to address it, just so for the benefit of everybody else listening. The obstinate spouse is often desperate to get you to give up Because if you give up, then they feel better about the fact that they've given up and they feel like they have a partner in their crime and, you know, they don't have to feel like the bad guy. And when you make efforts to apologize and to connect and to, you know, and to laugh and all this, you know, you shouldn't expect their reaction to be positive initially. As you've heard me describe in the program, it's not unusual. It's actually typical for things to get worse before they get better, because the very things that you need to do to turn things around are the very things that your spouse doesn't want you to do. But just because they don't want you to do it doesn't mean it's not going to work. But while you're doing it in the short term, they're likely to have a negative reaction, as Joe is describing. And so not only are they likely to have a negative reaction, but they will look for ways to have their way with you. They will look for ways basically to sell you on their agenda, to manipulate you, to concede to their agenda. People will use all sorts of tactics. Maybe we'll have a chance to get into some more of them. But Joe just revealed a very common one, which is, I'm going to call the police and get a restraining order. Let me explain to you something. I'm not a lawyer, but nonetheless, I've got many decades of experience with these situations. The restraining orders are designed to protect somebody who's in danger. Now, unless you came to his house not only with an apology letter, but also with a knife, I kind of doubt that he's going to be able to prove that you are trying to harm him and to get a restraining order. In fact, if he even tried to get it into the court system, which usually they don't, it's just a threat, you know, he would get laughed at the courtroom. They do not look favorably upon people that are trying to use the legal system to manage their marriage. Excuse me, sir, what are you doing here? Well, I want a restraining order against this woman. And who is this woman to you? Oh, she's my wife. Aha. And what did she do? Well, she came to my apartment and apologized. Is that why you want a restraining order, sir? Well, no. I want a restraining order because she called me. Aha, she called you. And when she called, did she threaten you? No. I mean, like, can you see where this is going to go? In fact, 99% of the cases, it doesn't even get to that point because there's no attorney that would take the case because they understand there is no case. So don't bow to these threats and you know, understand it for what it is, which is an ignorant, desperate attempt on the part of your husband to get you to give up, to derail your efforts, and to get you to concede to his agenda. In terms of the fear you're experiencing, it's a good question. I don't have an elegant answer to the question, but one thing I would suggest is to start small in your efforts to connect and reach out to him. I can't tell you not to take initiative. I understand it's the initiative that brings you fear, but I can't tell you not to take this initiative because your marriage has a certain trajectory right now, and it's not good. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in the program. The only way you're going to be able to change that trajectory is through initiative, through a tremendous amount of initiative. But you can start slow, and the more you take initiative, and the more you have the opportunity to build some goodwill and create some positive encounters, you know, other than your husband's threat, sounds like the apology discussion was decent. Some of the voicemails you're leaving, since you're in total control with the monologue, I'm sure they're decent. And over time, you know, I think your confidence will build a little bit. Now, again, I'm not overly confident about my answer to your question because, you know, there's a lot at stake here, and you want to do the right thing. And so it's kind of normal that you have what you're describing as fear, you know, almost like you're making moves that are going to impact your life. And you are. I don't mean that to scare you more, but, you know, this is a crucial time, and you're trying hard to do the right thing, and so using a different word, you know, you have some some cautiousness and some trepidation as you approach these things. That's the other thing that I think can help you with this fear and building a little more confidence, and that is really become a champion student of the program. The reason why I think that will help you is because, you know, I believe, and people tell me, that the more they go through the materials, soup to nuts, beginning to end, not just talk charges, touch charges, and date night, but the more they really go through it and master the material, the more they develop confidence that, you know, this is the right path, that I'm doing the right thing, and that what I'm doing and the approach I'm taking makes sense and gives me the best chance of reconciling. That has nothing to do with your husband's reaction, but that gives you an inner confidence that will enable you to take these initiatives with without, you know, so much fear.
Hi, Mort. I'm kind of struggling right now to...
What's your first name, sir?
It's Daryl.
Daryl. Okay, Daryl.
Yeah. And I'm my wife and I are going through the program, but we've had issues getting started. And materials were a little bit late, and you know, we just feel like we're playing catch up. And
Let me interrupt you, and I'll, don't worry, I'll stay with you, and you can ask your question. But you're not late, and there is no, and you're not catching up. You have, I assume it sounds. I don't know exactly what happened, if things got stuck in the mail, or what. But now you have everything you need. And you can go at your own pace. There's no rush. There's no such thing as being late. Even if even if a couple of teleconferences came and went, they are all recorded. They are all placed on your members-only website. You can click and listen at your convenience. I just wanted to jump in and try to alleviate your concern that, like, you missed something or that you're late.
We're on week five. And we just had our week five seminar, and you know, the materials itself, we're still in phase two or three right now, and trying to get caught up on the reading and everything. Time wise, we don't have a lot. We have kids, and you know, we don't have a lot of time before everybody has to go to bed in the evening, and we work. So it's been a little bit tough, and I wanted to know what the best thing to do, and you know, because you know, there are times where we're feeling like, okay, we need to prepare for, like, when you say we needed to set things aside, you know, for the longest time we were thinking that, you know, that meant that we needed to do the touch charges, the talk charges, and plan a day night, and that was how we dealt with, you know, when we needed to, you know, direct negative energy into a positive action. And then when we got the materials, I saw that there was more to it. And so there was a process that we needed to do in order to be able to set things aside, which made more sense. So, I mean, with this, I feel like I needed those things, you know, and to go through it step by step. But my wife is a little bit different. She feels that we've been doing things. I just don't want to do things in a halfway. I want to be able to do it and, you know that we've actually put everything in and we've been able to flow along with what, you know, the timing that you talked about in the beginning and being on, you know, within that timing, not letting things go too long to ruin opportunities or...
Let me interrupt again. I mean, I know you haven't even gotten to your question yet, but you just said something else that I just want to address, and I think it might be helpful to you and your wife and to everybody else. I appreciate your attitude of comprehensiveness, being on time, being on schedule, being comprehensive. It's a very nice quality, and I'm sure it helps you in many areas of your life. It can also, that blessing can also be a curse when you're dealing with other people who don't operate that way. And you have to be careful not to impose that sort of exactness upon your wife, because you know you're trying to do this to improve things, and that'll just make for a bad dynamic. I would instead encourage you to be grateful for you and your wife's participation in the program and progress, and whatever progress you're making. I'm sorry if I'm being repetitive, but I'll say again, you have everything you need to go at your own pace. As the mentor, as your mentor, and as the sort of the creator of the program, I'm forced, I'm sure you can understand why, to establish some sort of schedule for all of you. So, you know, we call it a 7-week program because the teleconferences are scheduled over the course of 7 weeks. But, you know, at the risk of making myself look not as good as maybe I do to you, let me admit, there's nothing magical about 7 weeks. you know, you could go through it all in 7 days. You could go through it in 17 weeks. You could go through it in 70 weeks. I think the important thing is that there's movement, is that there's progress. If you have progress and you have momentum, then, you know, you'll be moving in the right direction. Now, it could be, you know, it could be what you're thinking is, but Mort, we don't have any movement. We're not making any progress. Okay, that's a different story. You know, if that's the case for any of you, then, you know, then I would have a different message. There has to be movement. There has to be progress. There has to be some kind of schedule. But you've got enough stress and problems in your life. You don't need to add to it by, putting pressure on yourself that you have to keep to my schedule. There's a reason why all these teleconferences are recorded. There's a reason why I deliver to you all of the materials. In your case, Daryl, it sounds like hard copy, and many of you, it's digitally. You know, there's a reason why it's all there at your fingertips. Some people stay up all night and go through it all at once, and some people, you know, little chunks at a time. It's fine. It's fine either way. Anyway, now I interrupted you twice, and I'm going to let you get to your question.
No, I appreciate your response. But how, Mort, I would like to make sure that my wife and I are moving forward, and things somehow seem to be a little bit difficult.
Is your wife on the line?
She's right here next to me. Yes.
Okay. And what's her first name, if I don't mind me asking?
It's Jenny.
Jenny, would you also like things to be moving forward?
No.
Aha. Okay. So, and do you mean that you don't want to move forward in the program, or you don't want to move forward in the marriage, or both?
Both.
Aha. So, Daryl, I don't know why Jenny's on the phone with us. And let me welcome you to the Lone Ranger Trek.
She said she would do it with me. And I was hoping, she said she promised to do it with me.
And I am.
To give us one, I mean, really try. That's what we said we were going to do, to really try. And I know our hearts are somehow not in the right place a lot of times, but I was hoping that by going through and really putting things aside, that we could actually
I know, let me interrupt you again for the third time. I apologize, but I know what you want. I get it. But and it could be that Jenny, you know, made a commitment that she would go through the program, but it sounds like for whatever reason she changed her mind. Or maybe she didn't change her mind. More than likely she said yes just to placate you, and she didn't really want to. In any event, let me welcome you again to the Lone Ranger Trek and encourage you. It will not be helpful to cajole and pressure and try to convince Jenny to do this with you. You cannot give someone an answer to a question that they don't have. You cannot give someone a solution to a problem that doesn't bother them. We are the gatekeepers to our souls. And if the soul is closed, then, she might sit there for the hour, but it's not going to mean anything. It's not going to do anything. And by the way, I think that, and this is an important message for all of you, really important one, if you're desperate for your spouse to join you in the program, it could only be because you don't understand the impact that the program can have on your marriage through your own unilateral efforts. I mean that. If Daryl, I would encourage you to take half the energy that you're putting into trying to drag your wife along with this. Put half that energy into your own unilateral efforts in the program, and that will have 10 times the impact on Jenny and on your marriage. You don't need Jenny to participate in the program in order to change the momentum in your marriage. And you're just creating a negative dynamic by trying to convince her to do it. Do it yourself. It does not, one of the biggest lies out there, it does not take two to tango. One person can make a difference, a big difference. And I think it's a hard lesson to accept because it means that you have to take responsibility. And people don't want to do that. And not only does it mean you have to take responsibility, but it means you have to take responsibility alone, meaning that you have to take responsibility while your spouse ducks the responsibility. That's the hard part. Most of you would quickly and happily take responsibility if he, she would also. But without them doing it, it's hard to take responsibility. I understand. I do. I understand. You hear me address that difficulty throughout the program. But let's not get bogged down in discussions about your feelings. What I care about, and because I know it's what ultimately you care about, is the outcome, the effectiveness of things. And it is effective for you to take unilateral action. Can be incredibly effective. And when I come across people who are so anxious for their spouse to join them in the program, it's usually because they don't want to take responsibility and because they don't appreciate the impact that their own unilateral efforts can have on their marriage. Okay.
Hey, Mort, how are you doing? My name
Great.
Is Louis.
Good evening. What's your name?
Louis.
Okay, Louis. How can I help?
Basically, I have an issue. The issue is that my wife would not speak to me. She doesn't want anything to do with me. She wants her space. The only way I've been able to do something, and basically it was for her birthday, was send her something at work. It looks like that's the only way I could probably do something about it, you know, try to send her something, let her know that thinking about her, give her something that, like the program says, something that lets her know that I know who she is.
So, Louis, what's your question?
How do I get to her? Because it seems I have no way of getting to her, and I do not want to get her in trouble or get myself in trouble at her work.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I agree that you don't have any way to get to her. You yourself just told me that you are sending her gifts at work. Very good. So you should be doing that on a weekly basis, and you're getting to her every week. I assume also she has a cell phone, like we all do, and she has a work phone, probably. So you can also call her. The combination of those two things enables you to employ 99% of what I'm teaching in the program. And through the employment of those things, if you can begin to move the needle and build goodwill, she'll open up more access to you. She'll get together with you for a coffee at Starbucks. You know, and then you'll have, you know, physical presence as well, which will enable you to implement even more of the program. And I'm not sure what you meant by, you know, getting in trouble. There's no reason why you can't visit her at work to even get that physical access. So don't, you know, be careful not to focus on what you can't do. In these situations, there's always a ton that you can't do. So what? Nobody ever failed at saving their marriage because of what they can't do. People fail at saving their marriage because they don't do what they can do. Focus on what you can do and use it to move the needle and open up more access. And day by day, you'll get more access, you'll build more goodwill, you'll build more of a connection. These things don't resolve themselves overnight. You've got to wake up every day and be ready to put your nose to the grindstone, to do the work that's necessary to just make things a little bit better. And if every day you make them a little bit better, after a few months, they're a lot better. Keep up the good work. Hang in there. I appreciate all your excellent questions. I hope you found my responses helpful. Let me know what else I can do to help. Good night, everybody.
She's horrible. Her and her husband have been a coupon efficient as a couple. They have people.